Once again, we have a nice long gospel reading. I think it's for training to get into, to get ready for Palm Sunday when we do the entire Passion narrative. So, you know, you got to get into training for these things. But this interaction with Jesus and the man born blind and the religious leaders is one of my favorites. And though if you notice, Jesus exits the scene pretty early on. And he's kind of MIA for most of the exchange between this formerly blind man and the town folk and the religious leaders. But those of you that know me know that languages are not really my forte. And in high school, I had the mandatory language requirement and was required to read Le Petit Prince for my French class. And it was the bane of my existence, as I almost didn't graduate high school because of this class. But looking back, even as I struggled through it, I realized it had some profound things to say. If you've actually never read the story, I would encourage you to do so. But there is an English version. A lot easier. But it has a lot to say, especially to our blindness as adults, to things that are the reality around us. The story is about the narrator who meets this prince, and they go on travels and meet various different people. And at one part, they're with a fox, and they're about to leave the fox, and the fox says to the prince, he says, "Goodbye, and now here is my secret. A very simple secret. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye." And later on, when the narrator and the prince are desperate for some water, and they finally find a well, and they drink from it the most glorious water that they've ever tasted. And as he's drinking it, the prince starts to ruminate, and he says, "You know, the men where you live, they raise thousands of roses in the same garden, and yet they do not find it what they are looking for. And yet what they are looking for could be found in one single rose or in a little water." But the prince added, "But the eyes are blind. One must look with the heart." Well, in our interaction with the formerly blind man, Jesus reveals that the true blindness is with those who think they have it all together. The ones that are really blind are the ones who think they see clearly as to who God is, and that they only are the ones that have the proper insight. And yet they are blind. They're blind to the truth of Jesus, blind to the miracle that is literally standing right in front of them. I mean, I find it even interesting. The people that have known this man his entire life are incapable of seeing him now that his physical ailment has been healed. I mean, again, the proof is literally standing there. Tangible evidence that Jesus is true. And yet, as the saying goes, they miss the forest for the trees. See, they were so engrossed in their own belief of how the world was supposed to work. They were so engrossed in what they believed to be true about God, and they were so sure of their own self-righteousness. And mainly, the idea was that you were justified by God because of who you were and what you did. And if you had any disease or ailment, or if you suffered in every way, then that was proof that you were not accepted by God. And it was proof that you were evil and sinful. And yet they were unable to see the reality of Jesus, no matter how hard Jesus tried to make it clear. And the exchange between the supposedly sinful, formerly blind man and the supposedly righteous religious leaders kind of always makes me smile. I love this interaction. Because they are so unwilling to let go of the presumptions that they toss out of the synagogue the one who would actually be able to help them come to truly receive truth and know what God really wants. Since it was a long, I just have to go through it again. So you have the second time when they draw the man in, and they're telling him already what they believe to be true. Give glory to God, we know this man is a sinner. You know, so much for, you know, innocent before proven guilty. And I love the guy's answer. What does he say? I don't know whether he's a sinner or not. One thing I know, I was blind, and now I see. And then they ask him again, okay, now what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And you gotta kind of love the sarcasm, I think, that's coming out in this guy's voice. He's like, I've told you already, and you wouldn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples? Is that it? You know, you want me to help you become his disciple? Yeah, they obviously didn't care for that very much, as they just rail into him. You know, you are his disciple. We're disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know who he is or where he comes from. And again, kind of the sarcasm that comes out from this man is just brilliant. Here's an astonishing thing. He's talking to the religious leaders of the day. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opens my eyes? We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opens the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. We can imagine how these educated religious leaders felt being schooled by an uneducated, obviously sinful, formerly blind man. You were born entirely in sins, and you trying to teach us? And they drive him out, unwilling to receive the truth. So one commentator points out, says, the one truth that emerges from this story to me is this. If you choose to spend all your time looking to find sin in others, you are surely going to find it. If you spend all your time looking for sin in others, you surely won't have to look very far. The trouble with these Pharisee leaders in this story is they were so wrapped up in their own capacity to see truth that they couldn't spot the truth even when it slapped them right in the face. Indeed, they were so wrapped up in their own holiness that they couldn't even see God. People who are certain of their own insights are like that. They're actually blind. The Lenten discipline calls us to spend time examining our own lives and repenting of our own sins. It does not call upon us to point out the speck in our brother's eye. Rather, it calls us to reflect upon the log in our own and calls us to admit to our own blindness. Where are we allowing blindness to keep us from seeing the miracle Jesus is doing right in our midst? Where does our blindness cause us to miss what Jesus wants to accomplish in and through us? How often are we like these people with our presumption? And when God tries to open our minds and open our eyes to what is real and what is true, we shut them close tightly and kind of saying, don't confuse me with the facts. I know what I believe. Where are we blind? One of my seminary professors always told us that each one of us has our own pet sins that we like to keep blinders on to. We can see how sinful others are, but we're usually very ignorant and badly rationalize our own actions, thereby often depriving us of the abundance God desires for us. C.S. Lewis's last book in the Chronicles of Narnia, which is aptly named The Last Battle. There's a great scene after everything has come to a conclusion, and Aslan, the kind of Christ figure in the books, takes Lucy, Edmund, and Peter, and everyone to the new Narnia. And this place is glorious. It is a place of astonishing light and beauty, where every blade of grass is more vibrant than the best HDTV could ever show you. It's a place of sheer joy, where the depth of color causes a mere sight of a daisy to take your breath away. And it makes you weep the sheer beauty of the thing. But then as they are in the midst of this splendor, the children see a group of dwarves that are huddled tightly together. They're absolutely convinced that they are sitting in a rank, stenchy barn. And that a place is so dark that they can't see their hand in front of their face. And Lucy is just devastated by this. And she begs Aslan to do something. She begs him to help them see so that they can enjoy the new Narnia. And Aslan replies, "Dearest Lucy, I will show you what I can do and what I cannot do." Aslan raised his head and shook his mane. Instantly, a glorious feast appeared on the dwarves' knees. Pies and pigeons, trifles and ices, and each dwarf had a goblet of good wine in his right hand. But it wasn't much use. They began eating and drinking greedily enough, but it was clear that they couldn't taste it properly. They thought they were eating and drinking only the sort of thing that you would find in a stable. One said he was trying to eat hay, and another said he had got a bit of an old turnip, and a third said he'd found a raw cabbage leaf. And as they raised the golden goblets of rich red wine to their lips, they said, "Ugh, fancy drinking dirty water out of a trough that a donkey's been drinking out. Never thought we'd come to this." Very soon, every dwarf began suspecting that every other dwarf had found something nicer than they had. And they started grabbing and snatching and went on quarreling until in a few minutes there was a free-for-all and all the good food was smeared on their faces and their clothes or trodden underneath them. But when last they sat down to nurse their black eyes and bleeding noses, they all said, "Well, at any rate, there's no humbug here. We haven't let anyone take us in. The dwarves are for the dwarves." Aslan turns to Lucy and says, "You see? They will not let us help them. They have chosen cunning instead of belief. Their prison is only in their own minds, yet they are in that prison. And they are so afraid of being taken in that they cannot be taken out." See, they could not see Aslan's gift of the new Narnia, for they would not see it. Aslan could do nothing but leave them alone to the hell of their own devising. We are incapable of opening our own eyes. We need to allow Jesus to do that for us. We need to allow him to open us up to see who he truly is and what he truly desires for each one of us. See, God places the truth and reality of himself right before us. Every day, in so many ways, and in so many different moments. But we must choose to see and believe. We need to learn to echo John Newton's wonderful lyrics from Amazing Grace. "Amazing grace that saved a wretch like me. I once was blind, but now I see." Amen.